Being on tour was amazing. I had one of the best times of my life and had made so many memories that would last forever. But after many months of hotel room after hotel room and endless hours on a tour bus with a guy who had crusty nostrils and who loved to constantly make repulsive sounds with his own phlegm, I started to miss New York City. Oh, I fell more in love with America whilst visiting many states. But none of those states could compare to the love and connection that I felt for Mad Manhattan. And as much as I loved staring out of the tour bus window in awe at the Spanish Moss down south, I missed seeing the Empire State and Chrysler buildings all lit up. I missed my home. Turns out that Dorothy was right. When the tour ended, I spent my time auditioning for cheap television. Everything from infomercials to those awful shows with crime reenactments. I also picked up a few shifts at Cast so I didn't plow through my savings. Cast wasn't as happening as it had been once. Beyoncé was no longer showing up, nor was I spilling cocktails on Leonardo DiCaprio whilst passing them to Bradley Cooper. But Quasimodo and the escort still frequented the place, so the scene hadn't completely died, I suppose. Apartment in Harlem, having subletted again for the months I'd been out of town. Yvette and the destructive mouser Geronimo were still there. The neighborhood was just as crazy as ever. I would still bump into my neighbor who believed aliens were landing soon, hoping to overtake the world, and I would still take my laundry to Peaches and Clean Laundromat. Oh, sadly, I never bumped into Perfect Mike again. Oh, I had royally fucked that one up. During my time on tour, I received confirmation from my immigration lawyer that my green card application had been filed. So every morning, I would race down the two lots of stairs to check my mail. This particular morning, I didn't even bother getting out of my pajamas. Looking as much of a mess as possible was intentional and a safe bet, as the doorway to my building was forever occupied by a rotation of loiterers who were somehow associated with the barber shop next door. As I opened the mailbox for my apartment, a guy smoking a handmade cigarette knocked on the glass.
Queen of England.
Hello, how are you? He was totally harmless and quite sweet, really. He was in his 50s and always wore a flat cap.
All the better now.
I was amazed that he could speak and smile so big without the cigarette falling from his mouth, but then noticed he didn't have many teeth, and when he spoke, he somehow used his tongue to wedge the cigarette into one of the gaps where a tooth should have been. Ugh, there wasn't any mail that day. I locked the mailbox back up and said cheerio to Toothless. On my way up the stairs, I bumped into James. Awkward! Now this was embarrassing, because A, I don't think I'd remember to text him back when I'd been on tour, and B, my pyjamas were made from a cheap white material and I wasn't wearing a bra, and having big boobs meant they were swinging in the wind, so to speak. If I had jumped, I would have had a black eye or two. Oh, hi! How are you? Sorry, I was just checking the mail.
No worries. How are you doing? When did you get back?
He smiled. He clearly had been working out whilst I was away. God, his biceps had gotten huge. I wanted to hang off of them, like a koala upside down on a tree branch. I'm great, thanks. Just got back a couple of days ago, just adjusting to being back in New York. You know how it is.
Yep, it's crazy, especially where we live. Did you hear the guys above you having another fight again at like 2 a.m.?
The two guys above me were two gay guys who kept to themselves. They weren't the sort of gays who would invite you over to watch the Rocky Horror Show on Halloween and serve you homemade snacks. Instead, they decided to have huge fistfights and argue so loud the entire building could hear. Some mornings when I went to check the mail, there would be a trail of blood drops to follow like breadcrumbs, and these were most likely from one of their rendezvous a la fisticuffs. Oh, I passed out pretty hard last night. It's been super nice being back in my own bed. How's the music going? I was now aware of my protruding nipples. At this moment in time, they were more pointy than the spire on top of the Empire State Building.
Great, actually. I have a gig tomorrow if you want to come.
He looked up through his dark eyelashes as he spoke. Was he asking me out, or just trying to boost ticket sales? Oh, I'm actually working tomorrow, annoyingly, but would love to come to the next one.
Okay, cool, yeah. I'll let you know when. Anyway, I should get going. You look great, by the way.
He continued passing me on the stairs to exit. He almost seemed a little put out that I hadn't said yes to his gig. Maybe he was asking me out. Or maybe I was imagining it. I mean, I definitely did not look great. I looked like a 12-year-old who had developed early and been abandoned at a bus stop a week ago. Oh, I had lost some weight on tour. Maybe that's what he meant. As I wasn't working at the restaurant, I had signed up for volunteering at a soup kitchen in Chelsea. I felt it was important to give back to the city that was home to my dreams. It was also a great reality check and a reminder that you really don't need much in life to be happy. When I showed up to the soup kitchen that was inside a beautiful church, I was astounded by the amount of people lining up around the block. This was just one soup kitchen. How many hungry people in the city were there? I found the entrance for the volunteers around the other side of the building. I was instructed to lock up my things in the lockers provided. I was then handed an apron, a pair of gloves, and a not-so-sexy hairnet, which I guess was fine. Who wants to look sexy in a soup kitchen? Before we would get to work, we were instructed to sit at a table for a briefing. The briefing was where we would find out what our jobs were going to be for the next 4 hours. I was going to be topping up and refilling the water jugs on the tables. Very apt, given back in the day my friends used to call me Jugs. When the doors opened, the first 40 people were let in to line up for their food. I couldn't believe the variety and ages of this homeless community. To see people of any age having a tough time and not being in a position to feed themselves was heartbreaking. But I shamefully loved people watching and studying their behaviour here. I got to interact and see so many bemusing exchanges between those who were sat down eating. A lot of them knew each other. It was as if they had formed their own family. I would witness them turning their noses up at the food they had on their plates, even though you would think they would be so starving they would eat anything. Instead, they would barter their apples for another's bread roll. These guys were true New Yorkers. They knew what they liked and what they didn't like, and they certainly had spirit. Another thing I absolutely loved about volunteering was meeting the other helpers. Some were also homeless, but worked in hopes of getting to take a little extra with them when they left. That night, I felt even more grateful for my bed. Everything I had encountered at the soup kitchen stayed with me as I tried to sleep. Feelings of guilt, gratitude, and conflict. After not being able to fall asleep, I decided to pick up my phone and maybe do some online window shopping. Arrow had messaged me. I sat up, excited and hopeful. Whilst I had been away on tour, I had missed seeing him during his several visits to NY.
Hey, how are you?
Should I text back? Should I act cool? I put my phone down and then picked it straight up again. I'm good. You in NYC? He didn't text back right away, so I started Pinteresting. Then my phone vibrated. It wasn't Arrow. It was James.
Gig went great. Shame you missed it.
I was disappointed it wasn't Arrow, so went back to perusing simple vegan recipes on the internet. A few minutes later, above my head, I jumped out of my skin. It was so loud. I sat upright in bed, unsure what to do. Upstairs were fighting again. Someone was crying and screaming. I didn't know what to do. I knew if I called the police, they probably wouldn't bother coming. Anyone in New York would tell you the cops try to never get involved with domestic abuse reports, especially in this neighborhood. So I text James. Do you hear that? The crying continued.
Yeah. You okay?
I don't know. It's quite scary. Should we call the police?
They won't come.
I crept out of bed to see if Yvette had been awoken by this. Her door was slightly open, so I snuck in. She was passed out with her laptop, earphones plugged in, and Geronimo curled up next to her. Geronimo's ears pricked up, and he watched me like a silent assassin. It was quite cute, really.
You want me to come up?
Better not. Yvette is sleeping. She, like me, was a hustler, so I did not want to wake her, as I understood how important sleep was.
You're welcome to come down. I have tea.
I was about to decline then. Sure, be down in a sec. I quickly changed out of my gross and shabby white pajamas that I should probably throw away and into some cuter looking sweats and a woolen pink cardigan. I quietly let myself out, praying I wouldn't encounter any blood or dissected body parts on the stairs. I raced down the stairs and quietly knocked on James's door. He opened the door. He looked cute. He wore baggy grey sweatpants and a white t-shirt.
Hey, you. Come in. Is mint tea okay?
He walked over to the stove. To this day, I've never understood why Americans don't have electric kettles. I mean, they're so much easier.
That would be lovely. Thanks for letting me come down.
I was happy to be out from underneath the Battle Royale.
No problem. I was up anyway working on a new song. Honey?
No, thank you. Doesn't your roommate get annoyed at you for playing music this late?
Oh, he's away, but I normally work with my headphones. Here's your tea.
He handed me a blue mug.
You want to watch a movie?
Sure.
As we sat watching Indiana Jones, we somehow became intertwined. A few minutes later, we were kissing. I couldn't help but notice some differences from our last rendezvous. His kisses were slower and softer, as opposed to feeling hard and hungry. It felt more loving, but less passionate. He started to unbutton my cardigan. Once unbuttoned, he slid it off my shoulders. He then began kissing me in short bursts, travelling to my neck. He kissed me all along my collarbone while slowly sliding the straps of my vest and bra down. He grabbed my left breast and lifted it from my bra and then began sucking my nipple. It felt amazing. We stood up and I lifted his t-shirt over his head. I brushed his hair to the side so he could see me. All of me. A new, slimmer me. Drinking me in, he pulled down his sweats before doing the same to mine. Once our bottoms were both removed, he pushed me gently onto the couch. He held me up to remove the rest of my clothes before kissing me again. He went straight back to my breasts, kissing them and feeling their weight with his hands. Just as he started to kiss my stomach, there was a huge commotion coming from the hallway. We both sat up, startled. There was the sound of heavy footsteps running up the stairs, followed by thumping on a door. James and I started to grab our clothes and redress. The moment was gone. This was awkward. Oh, I guess another neighbor called the police and they did come.
Yeah, I hope everything is okay. Do you want some water?
Were my boobs salty?
Sure.
I grabbed my phone to see the time. It was almost 5 a.m. and Arrow had finally texted me back.
Not in NYC. Soon.
Holly, you okay?
Yeah, of course.
You want another mint tea?
He started to fill the kettle for the stove.
Actually, do you fancy going to Starbucks? Pretty sure it's open and I fancy some caffeine.
Yeah, sure. Let me just grab my sweater.
He put the kettle down and went into his room. As we left our building, we saw a police car parked right outside, its lights flashing, its signature blue. James and I walked side by side to Starbucks. As sketchy as our neighborhood was, I never felt afraid walking in this direction. The walk to the 3 train stop was the scariest, as there were always gangs on the sidewalks. When you walked to Starbucks, you felt pretty safe because you walked past some of the newer buildings. One of them even had a friendly doorman and a pretty little park. The sky was beautiful this time of day, a sunrise made of a mixture of orange and blue. As James and I turned the corner, we for some reason decided to hold hands. And for a moment, everything felt nice. And it was peaceful. Then, in true New York fashion, it suddenly wasn't. As we approached Starbucks, we saw a guy pushing a red supermarket trolley. Inside the trolley was what appeared to be a rolled-up carpet. I let go of James's hand, disturbed by what I noticed next. I stopped walking. I stopped breathing.
What's wrong, Hall?
I was too stunned to talk. I pointed to the carpet, which looked like it had come from the land of Aladdin. There, sticking out the end of the carpet, were feet of a corpse. James, now noticing the feet, grabbed my hand, spun me around, and dragged me back in the direction of our home. My heart was racing. We walked as fast as we could, neither one of us saying a word. When we reached our apartment, the police car was gone. What should we do? We walked up the stairs. Should we do something? I mean, that was real, right?
I don't think we should get involved. I think we need to pretend we didn't see anything. Besides, if Starbucks has any security cameras, it'll be on those.
He wasn't being a coward. He was right. I mean, would you want to make yourself a target to someone who ironically was wheeling a corpse around in a Target shopping trolley? Both feeling sleep deprived and unsure how we should process the last 4 hours, we went our separate ways and back to our own apartments. Yvette was still fast asleep. Geronimo was sitting on the couch. He watched me slump into my bedroom. I climbed onto my bed, threw my phone down, and stared up at the ceiling for a while.
What the fuck, New York? I thought.
I grabbed my phone from beside me to see if anyone had messaged. Nothing. I read Arrow's last message.
Not in NYC. Soon.
Should I respond? I mean, you're not meant to respond if there's no question. Oh, fuck it. Life is short, apparently.
Hopefully soon. I was about to fall asleep when my phone buzzed. I grabbed it with haste. I gasped. It was Arrow.
Very soon.
Very soon? When? I wanted to know.
Before I could text him back, he texted me.
Can I stay on your famous pink couch?
Of course you can.
I fell asleep waiting for his response. I didn't wake up until noon, and as if none of the events of the hours before had occurred, I proceeded with my usual routine of making a cup of tea and checking the mail. When I got to the mailbox, someone knocked on the glass panes of the main door to the building. It was Toothless. He waved and smiled, smoking a joint this time. I waved back. I opened the mail. Inside was a white envelope. I took it out slowly. It had the official stamps and the markings on it. I was about to find out if my green card application had been accepted and approved.
I ran up the stairs and sat down on the couch, making Geronimo scamper away back into a vet's room, which was now empty as she had left for work. I looked at the envelope, trying to figure out its contents before opening it. I stared hard at it, as if I suddenly had acquired a superpower of foresight. I took a deep breath, trying to not get my hopes up or allow myself to think about auditioning for Broadway. I began to open it slowly and with perfect precision. I took the letter out and unfolded it carefully. My eyes raced over the words. It couldn't be. I reread the letter 3 more times. My application had been denied.
Next time on FUNYC, Holly gets naked in front of the Empire State Building and meets the Bride of Jesus.
I'm the Bride of Jesus.
Here we go.
FUNYC, an IDC production, starring Emily Eden. Written and created by Emily Eden. Sound design and engineering by Louis Fisher. Executive producer, Marcy Gilbert. Co-created, produced, and directed by Eric Wickstrom. Guest starring Oliver Burns, Miles Elliott, Sri Gordon, Louis Fisher.